Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
Good morning. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. So good to have you with us. Coming up later this hour, we're going to open up the phones and hear your favorite memories of the Arclight Theaters, particularly the flagship of the chain, the Hollywood Sunset Boulevard location where the Cinerama Dome also is there. I remember broadcasting from there live on the opening of the Arclight, getting a tour through before anybody had actually seen films there. And it's remarkable to see theaters that were set up really like screening rooms where the decorative elements were pretty much non-existent. It was all about making the experience of watching the film as pleasurable, as engrossing as possible. With the word that we received yesterday that Pacific Theaters, which owns the Arclight chain, is not going to reopen its locations, we're going to talk about that as well and also get an update on whether any other operators might be taking over some of those sites, particularly the ones that are in major retail places like The Grove or the Americana in Glendale, where it's really a central feature of those malls. But first, we turn our attention to a place that has seen so much loss and suffering during the past year of the COVID-19 pandemic. That is nursing homes, as they have typically early on in the pandemic led the way in deaths from COVID-19. But of course, nursing homes have long been receiving attention for substandard care at many facilities and deep concerns about state oversight of California's skilled nursing facilities. As so often happens with us here at KPCC, it's something from a listener that really triggers our look more deeply into a particular subject area or societal concern, such as the case with an investigative series that LAist and KPCC, along with CalMatters, have undertaken in this area. Joining me is KPCC investigative reporter Aaron Mendelson, also KPCC investigative reporter Ellie Yu, joining us as well. Aaron and Ellie, thank you both for joining us. We appreciate it. Aaron, let me start with you about the genesis of this very in-depth look you've done at California nursing homes.
Yeah, so it began with a story that LEU did last year in the spring about a nursing home in Los Angeles and issues that they were having there controlling the coronavirus and not even being able to test for COVID at the time. This, like I say, was in the spring. And from that, it got us looking at the ownership of this nursing home and realizing that it was not just a single nursing home, but part of a large chain. So after several months of reporting, we can tell you this chain is connected to a company called Renew Health. It is based in Monrovia. Its CEO and founder is a woman named Crystal Solorzano. They are tied to at least 26 nursing homes across the state. And notably last year, state health officials denied Renew's founder and CEO Solorzano licenses to take over 9 existing nursing homes. That is a very unusual step, but officials cited a long list of really troubling violations at facilities tied to her. And they even raised concerns about her character, saying that she submitted allegedly fraudulent documents when she had applied to become a nursing home administrator several years before. But the rub here, Larry, is that even though the state denied these applications to take over the nursing homes, Solorzano and her businesses are still running those nursing homes because of the way the state's process works. So she appealed that decision. And while that is on appeal, this could take years, she and her businesses continue to run those nursing homes.
Ellie, also Solorzano had links to another troubled operator of nursing homes, a much larger operator here, where she had been an administrator for that company.
Yeah, Crystal Solorzano had used to work for a company called Breas, which is one of the which is the largest operator here in California. She was an administrator down at a nursing home in Imperial County, down by the California-Mexico border. There, you know, there were some troubles at that nursing home. She and the facility had been sued for elder abuse. There was a man there, an 84-year-old, who eventually had to have his leg amputated after a wound was not treated. The lawyer for that man told us that there were some really gruesome things that happened, including, you know, maggots growing in his leg. Eventually, the case settled, and lawyers for the facility denied the allegations. And after that nursing home, Solorzano went to go work for a company that services a lot of Breas nursing homes called Rockport. And she was in state testimony. She was described as a key employee at that facility, and it and according to state testimony, she left eventually with a severance package.
And then started her own chain of nursing homes. Ellie, how difficult is it, if at all, to start getting into this business? What's required in the way of expertise or background to get state licensure?
So, well, advocates would say that there's not much required. You can buy a nursing home as an owner. I think what's interesting about the process here is that if you're an aspiring nursing home owner, you can take over an existing facility without applying for a license first. You can enter these temporary management agreements while your application for a license is pending. So even you can continue running these nursing homes without having gotten formal approval from the state. Even if the state eventually denies you these licenses to run these nursing homes, you can still continue to run them because you can appeal, and those appeal processes can take years. So it's a process where you can actually start operating a nursing home before formally getting a license from the state.
And that could be someone with no experience at all, or operator of previous facilities with terrible track record?
That's right. That's happened in many other states as well. We know that even private equity firms have gotten into the nursing home industry business. So you're not required to have a history of nursing. You're not required to have been in the nursing home industry to be able to take over a nursing home.
We're talking with KPCC and LAist investigative reporters Ellie Yu and Aaron Mendelson. If you have questions for them or you want to relate to us, any thoughts you have if you've worked in the nursing home business, we're at 866-893-KPCC. If you had a family member in a nursing home and you had to deal with an issue that went to the state level, share with us what your experience was, what your perception was of state oversight. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Also with us, health reporter from Cal Matters, Jocelyn Wiener, whose recent piece, California Oversight of Nursing Homes, called Befuddling or Broken. Jocelyn, thank you for being with us. To what degree does the general public have access to information about a nursing home, maybe where they're considering placing a family member?
Hi, thanks for having me. Well, it really depends on the nursing home. When we were trying to piece together what the licensing looked like for the pieces that we focused on, it was often the case that the licensee was actually the previous owner. And so the current owner's name wouldn't be on there. So, for example, we focused on our pieces on 18 country villa homes that have been left in pending status by the state for the past 5 years since Shlomo Reknitz's companies acquired them in bankruptcy court. And none of those homes have his name or his companies anywhere on the state's website. So someone who is looking to figure out you know, if the owner matters to them when they are placing their family member, they're not going to be able to see that on the state's website.
All right. Jocelyn, describe for us as well, you know, what some of the biggest complaints that people have had in terms of lack of response from the state or inability to get specific nursing homes investigated.
Well, I can tell you my experience, which is that I was able to get from the state after many months response to Public Records Act request, but they wouldn't put anyone on the phone during the 6 months that I was reporting this story. And they were not, so they were only sending sort of brief emailed responses. This is the California Department of Public Health. And from what I hear from advocates, they've been bringing this issue up to the state repeatedly for years, and there's been no movement on it.
We're talking with Jocelyn Weiner of CalMatters, health reporter for the statewide nonprofit news organization. Also with a staff attorney for California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, Mike Dark. Mike, thank you for joining us today. What sort of changes would your organization like to see in how the state oversees nursing homes?
Thanks for having me, Larry. There are so many changes that are necessary to make sure that our seniors are safe in long-term care in California. And what the COVID pandemic has done is really put a spotlight on some of the key areas that reform is needed. One, and this is a critical one that's touched on in Jocelyn's story, also the LAS story, is the necessity for the state to actually act as a true regulator in providing oversight to who's actually operating these homes. The really crazy thing, Larry, is that in California, you need a license to operate a car. You need a license to be a dog groomer or to be a dentist or to be a lawyer. You can't, for example, borrow somebody else's license to drive a school bus. But that is essentially what the California State Department of Public Health is doing right now. It's letting nursing home operators use someone else's license to run these homes, which are full of medically frail and vulnerable people. And so a really critical area of reform is to ensure that the state perform the right kind of oversight, the right kind of vetting of owners before they actually start operating a facility, not afterwards. And while Assemblyman Muratsuchi has done a fine job introducing a bill to address that area, AB 1502, we were disappointed to see that it's been sidelined this year. It's supposed to come up again in January, but this sort of two-year process is often a way of killing a bill. And so we're hopeful, but we're also wary of the influence wielded by the nursing home industry in the political process.
We, by the way, have asked for a representative of the industry to join us and the organization known as the California Association of Health Facilities. The Nonprofit Trade Association declined our interview request to join us in this segment as we look at the regulatory structure for nursing homes, as well as some of the most egregious and tragic examples of lack of care that's happened in nursing homes here in California. Mike Dark of California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform. Back to this issue of a new owner coming in and operating a nursing home under the previous owner's license, is the previous owner then liable for any sort of mistreatment, any violations of the law, anything? Since it's under their license, are they still then in this interim period liable?
So one thing that we would be delighted to see as an organization is for the state to do a better job holding anybody liable for the kind of neglect and abuse that we routinely see in long-term care facilities in California. But in answering your question, it should be the new owner who is responsible. It's the new owner, even if they're not the person whose name is on the license, who is making the hiring decisions, who's deciding how much staff is available, how much PPE a facility might have. So, yes, in theory, it would be the operator who should be liable. But it makes it still makes a lot of business sense for the previous owner to just hand off their license to someone else so they could get a sale done when they want to.
We'll continue our conversation on what we're seeing in nursing homes. Let me just add a listener comment here. Jay in Redlands says, my wife works in a nursing home. The number one thing she sees is a lot of families who essentially abandon their older family members. So sad to see that. In fact, one of the Oscar-nominated documentaries this year from Chile actually shines a lot light on that issue, that so many people that are in skilled nursing facilities, once family members place them there, then don't reach out and contact the people that are there. So if they don't have an advocate and it all falls on the care facility to be responsible in providing that care and they don't do it, it leaves the patient totally vulnerable. Once again, our phone lines are open for you at 866-893-KPECC. If you have worked in a nursing facility or currently work in one, if you're a family member of someone who has recently received care or is currently receiving care in one, share with us some of the things that you see in that environment. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. My wife, as a speech pathologist, used to work in nursing homes with swallowing problems with the patients there. And the stories she relayed to me about the remarkable difference between facilities, and so much of it, in her view, went to the administrator of that facility and the kind of environment she or he really brought about. Some wonderful places, very caring, very loving, and other places with serious needs. 866-893-KPCC. We'll be back in just 1 minute on Air Talk. You're listening to Air Talk on KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle, joined by two of our LAist KPECC investigative reporters who have done a very lengthy and deep dive into a troubled nursing home chain operating here in California and telling the stories of what have happened to residents at those facilities. Ellie Yu and Aaron Mendelson, our guests, are those reporters. Ellie, you talked with someone who'd served as a housekeeper at an East San Francisco Bay Area facility. Devon Green's his name?
Yeah, that's right. We spoke with several former employees who worked at Renew Connected facilities. Devon was a housekeeper last year at Arinda Care Center. It's in the Bay Area, as you mentioned. Crystal Solorzano, Renew CEO, has owned that facility since 2015. Well, officials there found that nearly almost every resident was infected with COVID-19 last spring. Devon says, you know, when he first started working there in April, the virus had already been spreading. He told us that staff members who were symptomatic and coughing were able to work. And to him, he wasn't surprised that the virus had spread so quickly. Here's what he told us.
A lot of their staff had it, right? So initially when I started, it was like this. Okay, you're negative, you're negative, you're negative. So you work with the negative patients. Y'all positive, y'all work with the positive patients. But, like, you know, by being more positive than negatives, they start letting the positive workers work with the negatives. And before you knew it, everybody had it.
Go ahead, Ellie. I'm sorry.
No, he also told us that PPE was being reused at the facility. He says he was given a cardboard box where he stashed his mask, and so he'd use that for several days. Inspectors found that the nursing home wasn't properly or consistently using PPE either. And then he later said to investigators that when inspectors had arrived, management had actually staged PPE before inspectors came. A citation later issued by the state said deficient practices there resulted in a widespread outbreak of COVID-19 last spring.
When you contacted Crystal Solorzano of Renew, this health group that operate these 26 facilities, what was her response?
She declined our request for an interview, but a spokesman provided a statement in response to a detailed description of our reporting. It said, quote, Ms. Solorzano is fully qualified to own and operate nursing homes and, in fact, has specialized in acquiring troubled facilities and turning them around to preserve and maintain critical bed space that would have otherwise been unavailable during the pandemic. The statement also said that they had facilities in hard-hit areas of California in terms of COVID-19 and that they continue to follow infection control protocols.
Aaron, what are your thoughts about, you know, with the COVID-19 pandemic and the inability of family members to visit in person in the nursing homes because of fear of spread of COVID? How did you see that affecting the ability of family members to make sure that the quality of care necessary was there for their family members?
Sure. So it's a really difficult situation, even outside of a pandemic, to, you know, check in on a family member every day or weekly. It's just not an easy thing to do. And then when the pandemic hit last year, visiting rules understandably changed right away, and people weren't able to visit their loved ones. And so, you know, they had to call. They could try and FaceTime, visit through windows, but those are not easy things to do. They're subject to what the staff is able to do at any given time. And if there aren't enough staff, then you're going to have trouble doing those things. And that is one thing we talked to earlier. You heard from Devon Green, who was at the nursing home in the East San Francisco Bay Area. That is a nursing home where investigators found that there were huge and persistent staffing problems. And so that may have been a factor in the spread of the coronavirus there.
Let's talk with listener Reza in Burbank. You're on Air Talk.
Hi, Larry.
Hi.
Pleasure to be on air with you.
Thank you. I understand you have a telemedicine business and you work with nursing homes?
Yes. And the main reason, I was lucky to retire early in my career. And after having a loved one at a nursing home, I came across opportunity where I felt the problem, the main problem of these facilities is really quality of care. The staff is really not conditioned or trained to deal with the type of patients that they have. The hospitals are pushing more acute patients to these facilities. And, you know, I'm not going to name any names or even plug my own company, but the reason I called is we, you know, as a society, it's very easy to start pointing fingers at the state and at the government. But I feel the biggest problem, and that's what I own a startup and I'm, you know, aggressively trying to fix this problem is that the problem is the quality of care. And it is because of the fact that the staff is really not properly trained to deal with such patients, you know, like, you know, we have patients on ventilators and the doctors are not really, you know, given much opportunity or they're not incentivized to take care of these patients at these facilities because they're limited to how much they can get paid. Really, at the end of the day, it's about money.
Sure. But I guess my question would be is if you've got individual operators who are bad operators, if they end up particularly with multiple properties and they're providing staff that isn't properly trained, do the kinds of things you're talking about, then who oversees that whole process? Reza, I appreciate you joining us. Mike Dark of California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform. You want to respond to the point he's making?
Yeah, in fact, I'd like to link the point that Reza is making with the question that you asked, Larry, about visitation. This really goes down to the fact that almost all nursing homes in California are for-profit facilities. And the single biggest budget item for these facilities is staffing. So if they want to increase their profit margins, the first thing they do is cut staffing. And what you wind up having in many facilities is maybe a single certified nursing assistant. This is a very underpaid, poorly trained person who is supposed to see 10 or 12 or 15 residents an hour. That's bathing them, feeding them, giving them medication, and now during COVID, disinfecting themselves between each resident, which of course just isn't possible. In fact, before COVID hit, staffing was such a huge problem that it was really family visitors who would come in, bathe their loved ones, make sure that they were eating, identify problems like bed sores, bring it to the attention of the state when necessary. And so when we saw those visitation restrictions put in place as COVID began, a key safety net and source of care was cut off, and we saw conditions really spiral into disaster across the state.
You mentioned about one CNA being responsible for all these patients, but aren't there minimum staffing levels that the state requires just as they do in hospitals?
There sure are, but they are very easily manipulated in the data that facilities provide to the state, and the state often doesn't ask very many questions. I got a call from family members of a resident of a facility in Orange County on Christmas night because there were in one wing 43 residents ill with COVID who being cared for by a single nurse who was herself ill with COVID. I went to the state, asked the state to investigate, and by the time the state showed up 2 days later, the facility was adequately staffed. There was flowers on everybody's tables, crossword puzzles set up for the residents. So they also know when the state is coming because they get the word ahead of time.
All right. What would you ideally like to see, Mike, in the way of state oversight of these facilities?
So a couple things. First, everyone should understand that these facilities and the industry learn what regulators teach them. And so when regulators say that an infection control violation should come with no financial penalty, $0, as is the case, that teaches the industry that infection control just is not a problem to be taken seriously. And we shouldn't be surprised that infection control conditions were so bad at the time the outbreak began that it spread like wildfire throughout the state. So enforcement needs to be taken much more seriously. There's good laws, but they are not adequately enforced. And as you yourself pointed out earlier in the program, Larry, the state needs to do a much better job vetting the kind of people who are running these facilities in the first place.
We're at 866-893-KPECC. Lisa messaged on our AirTalk Facebook page, I'm an occupational therapist who works at nursing homes. Seems to me an inherent issue is that nursing homes are treated as real estate investments by the owners while they're medical facilities with the most vulnerable populations. What do real estate developers know about providing best medical care? Mike Dark, is that an accurate portrayal, or are the operators of these facilities people who have some sort of a background in healthcare?
No, your caller makes an excellent point, and one which we're hoping will be addressed in some legislation this year. Indeed, these facilities are often operated by people who have little or no experience providing care to these very ill and elderly people. And crucially, there's very little transparency about the way the facilities spend the healthcare dollars that the facilities get from programs like Medicare and Medi-Cal. Often that money goes not to patient care, but to management services, to real estate companies that lease the land on which the facilities sit, and so on. And neither the public nor the regulators see that money disappearing. And so another bill, AB 650, would try to open up the books of these companies so that we can see just how taxpayer dollars are being spent.
That's Mike Dark, staff attorney for the California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform. Denise in Crenshaw Manor says residents in nursing facilities who do have family advocates are sometimes resented and misled in terms of what the facility will actually let them know, also not telling them about actual issues that are going on. LEU, KPCC, and LAist investigative reporter, you actually have someone you talked with who was, you know, during COVID in this difficult situation of trying to say goodbye.
Yeah, I spoke with a woman named Cynthia Carrillo. Her brother David was at a nursing home in Upland in December of 2019. So just a few months before the pandemic hit, she had been visiting every day. And of course, when the pandemic hit, COVID shut everything down. She was already worried about sort of his condition at the nursing home. She said, you know, his condition there got worse. And then when COVID shut everything down, she couldn't visit. She couldn't go in. And she was able to finally visit him through a window. And you know, she told us that what she saw concerned her. She saw that staff weren't also wearing masks around him. David eventually died 3 weeks later from COVID-19. He was 65. Here's what Cynthia told us.
You know, all the years of loving on him and taking care of him, and then you place him in a place where you're thinking they're going to do everything they can and live up to what their standards are of, you know, oh, we're going to take care of your loved one. In reality, that didn't happen. And so it was shocking when they called me to let me know that my brother passed.
She's since filed a wrongful death lawsuit against the facility, and that case is pending. But it was very difficult for her not to be able to visit her brother daily like she used to.
Connie in Los Feliz called and was wondering if a nursing home is found liable for a resident's death, is there a limit for damages? Connie says her mother was in a nursing home and trying to get information about her mother's death from a stroke. And I don't know, Mike Dark, do you know, is there any cap on damages a family can be awarded?
So there is a problem right now in California after a Supreme Court decision last year in a case called Jarman created very draconian restrictions on how much damages could be assessed for an individual instance of a harm. Like if there's understaffing that's happening every single day, do you assess damages based on a single instance of understaffing, or do you say that it's times, you know, the number of days in which there was understaffing? And the Supreme Court unfortunately took a very restrictive view, which in turn disincentivized attorneys and residents and their families from pursuing legitimate claims of abuse and neglect that are happening in these homes.
Karen in Yorba Linda, you're on Air Talk.
Yes, hi, thank you. I stumbled upon your station today. This topic is so interesting and near and dear to my heart.
Well, we hope you'll stay with us going forward. Go right in.
Yes. We recently had a situation with a parent, and I learned so much. I heard the comment that you all made about patients being abandoned at these facilities. I discovered that there comes a point when you have an army of good healthcare providers around your person that you're caring for, the family does get exhausted. But Medicare and Medi-Cal in the state of California, it's like this big ball of yarn. And as you start pulling at this string of yarn, you just continue to learn more and more and more. And at some point, not only are the family caregivers exhausted, but you discover that people who've worked so hard their entire life, who are natural born citizens, who are entitled to certain services through Medicare, Medi-Cal, don't receive those benefits. Nursing facilities, skilled nursing facilities in particular, are very poor at sharing with families what is available to the person, to the patient. And you almost have to step back. The family has to step back, turn their person over to the skilled nursing facility in order to force the skilled nursing facility to provide the patient with services that they're entitled to.
All right, Karen, I'm sorry because we're tight on time. Mike Dark, you have a quick comment on that? Mike, you there? Nope. Okay, I guess we lost him. Let me go back to Aaron Mendelson, KPCC and LAist investigative reporter. Aaron, just share with us, for those who want to read the in-depth work that you and Ellie have done on LAist, share what they'll find there in this lengthy investigative report.
Yeah, absolutely. So we lay out everything that we've learned about this company, 26 facilities up and down the state of California, the quality of care issues that that regulators have documented at their facilities, the issues with this applying to take over new facilities, and how the state has tried to deny Crystal Solorzano and how her companies nevertheless are operating those facilities. One other detail I think listeners will find really interesting, Crystal Solorzano shared anti-coronavirus vaccine memes on Instagram, which a doctor that we spoke to, he was really horrified to see that. He was concerned that nursing home staff would see her posts and then decide not to get vaccinated. So it's a very in-depth report. You can find it at las.com. We will also have a radio special coming next week. So folks should look out for that as well. And I would also plug Jocelyn's story at CalMatters is a really thorough and deep dive into this subject too.
Aaron, thank you so much. Aaron Mendelson, KPCC and LAist investigative reporter. LEU, thank you for joining us. Ellie and Aaron collaborating on this. Ellie, KPCC, LAist investigative reporter. Jocelyn Wiener's work can be read on the statewide nonprofit news site CalMatters, of which I'm a sustaining member. She's health reporter for CalMatters. And our thanks to staff attorney for the California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, Mike Dark. Coming up on Air Talk, what the closure of Pacific Theaters and ArcLight Cinemas means here in Southern California. If you are someone loyal to going to ArcLight facilities, whether the flagship location on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood or any of the others in Southern California or the Pacific Theaters locations, I want to hear from you. We got the sad news yesterday. They're not reopening under Pacific Theaters management. I want to hear your memories of those. 866-893-KPECC, back in 90 seconds.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.